Blog Talk Radio.
Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing today?
We can't quit until we get our share. Don, a lot of things going on here in our beloved Minnesota, if you will. Oh, we're just looking at the monitors in studio, talking in terms of hunt intensifies for accused killer. But say, Don, I just wanted to say I'm a little depressed. The chair of the Democratic State Committee here charged with DWI, I mean, I just think there's some kind of conspiracy, you know what I mean, to do us Democrats in, you know? I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, we drink in moderation. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, to one of our great leaders, you know what I mean? I know you Republicans are going to take advantage of that, you know?
Well, you know, when this originally came out, you know, Corey Day is the BFL party executive director, and he was charged with 2 counts of driving while intoxicated. For a December incident in which he hit 2 parked cars. And that's pretty interesting, Mr. Edwards, because Mr. Ed McDonald of the Council on Black Minnesotans had told me that he had told Corey that if he ever, you know, needed a ride home or something like that, to give him a call. So that's kind of interesting that still happened.
Well, I'm kind of puzzled, even though Mr. Day is an African-American, right?
Yes, he is.
And I am kind of puzzled on why it took so long to charge him with DWI. Normally, in this state, I mean, as soon as you get through with that breathalyzer, you're charged, buddy. So we must have, I have to say for my Democratic friends, we must have a little politics at play here.
Yes.
Because it's February now, right?
Well, yeah, it was. And it's very interesting, Mr. Edwards. This time, they even put the statement of probable cause online. It has a PDF document. Star Tribune did this. It's online now. They posted about 20 hours ago online and said he was at 29th Street West and Lindale Avenue. And, I mean, that's over there in the neighborhood of a couple of bars, actually.
Well, isn't that where Rudolph's, the big barbecue place, is also over in that area?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and then there are a couple of other bars that, that's really unfortunate. You know, we Democrats just don't like that. I tell you, this has not necessarily been a good period of time for, you know, politicians. By the way, Don, I was looking this morning for the statement on the Viking Stadium. Looks like we still don't have that construction manager, that $753 million contract in place. I'm beginning to get worried because my African-American leaders here in state of Minnesota and Twin Cities are expecting a big payday. I mean, that doesn't mean we're going to hire any black people, but they expect a big payday.
Yes, they do. And they just released the equity plan, Mr. Edwards, yesterday on the stadium. And it's just, you know, a lot to do about nothing. And so I find that pretty interesting. And I wait to find out the circumstances that's going to happen with the person who ends up winning the contract.
Well, actually, it'll be a company. It'll be a big company. I'm calling back with some friends of mine on the West Coast who are very familiar. Well, of course, everybody is familiar in the NFL with Hunt Construction out of Glendale, Arizona. I mean, they are the anointed sons, if you will. M.A. Mortensen, a local company here that has a deplorable diversity record in hiring African-Americans, some way or another got positioned as apparently one of the 2 finalists. M.A. Mortensen clearly. Now, M.A. Mortensen falsifies a lot of numbers and figures to make it appear that that they're doing diversity and in compliance, you know what I mean? But I just don't know how M.A. Mortensen could even be in the running. You know, M.A. Mortensen has never done a stadium with a roof.
No.
And if you don't have a roof here on the People Stadium, that's what we call it for our listeners, the People Stadium, as if the people really, you know, are going to have something to do with it other than pay more taxes. I'm not quite understanding how you give the contract to M.A. Mortensen when you got a deadline of July 2016, and I mean, you better meet that deadline or the Vikings are out of here.
Yes.
Will. And so I'm just kind of trying to figure out how Mortensen's going to be able to do this. This would be the largest contract they've ever had in the history of their little company. So anyways, we're looking at that. But the reason I also brought that up, story that will not be seen in the local general media, was a very quiet payout. I don't know if you remember this, Mr. Allen, but about a year or so, a couple years ago, a former University of Minnesota basketball great who had been employed by the city of Minneapolis for 35 years, Marvin Corky Taylor, a great legend,
yes,
played on those great university teams of 71, 72, 72, 73. Well, Corky Taylor was fired by Velma Corbell, your good friend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Back in 2011. In fact, he was fired on the same day that he was told that he had an incurable cancer, which, you know, shows what kind of sweethearts we are here.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Taylor passed from this life in July of 2012. And ironically, on that particular note, on the very day that he passed, a couple hours before he passed, the city of Minneapolis agreed to make a settlement with him for wrongful termination.
Mm-hmm.
And after he died, they tried to renege.
Shut up!
Yes, they did. They tried to withdraw the offer, citing all kinds of legal precedent and such. Well, the law firm that was representing Mr. Taylor, to their credit, decided that wasn't going to happen. And then, more importantly, to the credit of Mr. Taylor's, the late Mr. Taylor's wife and his family, both here and in Detroit, Michigan, they pursued this and finally forced the city of Minneapolis just this past Tuesday to pay out the settlement, a little $34,000, if you will, based on the Pacific claims that he provided with EEOC.
Mm-hmm.
And so what has basically happened is that there is now getting ready to be a full disclosure of that Mr. Taylor was one of five employees, three African-American, one Filipino, and one white female who were targeted to be expunged, if you will. Unfortunately, two of them are dead.
Yes.
Two of them died natural deaths, if you will, and Miss Lauren Marker and Mr. Taylor. But anyways, something, Don, you and others may want to keep an eye on here as it pertains to the equity plan.
Yeah.
That Miss Corbell and her friends over at the Met Council allegedly developed that was supposedly passed by the Sports Facility Authority yesterday morning. So that's another issue that we have here because your leaders, Don.
Yes.
The same ones that, well, some of them got invited and some of them didn't get invited to meet with the president. For our listening audience, the president was here with us earlier.
Yeah.
If you will. And so Marvin Corky Taylor, for those that well remember him and cherish his memory, prevails over the city of Minneapolis and proves that they wrongfully terminated him for being a whistleblower. Okay?
Yes, yes. And we're going to have to see because, you know, Mr. Edwards, you know, Ms. Corbell has run into some turbulent times right now, especially with her stating that the city of Minneapolis had no veterans preference, which we know now was untrue. So,
Yes. I knew it sitting there that night. I mean, yes. As a former overseer for the federal court for the Minneapolis Fire Department for 21 years, I knew that she wasn't telling the truth. But, you know, our city officials here, and Democrats too, are just able to get away with these kinds of misrepresentations.
Yes.
Yes. You're absolutely right. I understand she's run into some real problems because, you know, she did say that you and I were liars.
Oh, yeah. She told she told a number of people about that. And we'll have some more news coming out of City Hall, because next Saturday we're going to break something wide open, but we'll just keep that a secret right now.
Absolutely.
We'll have something to play for our listeners that's just going to blow that whole situation down at City Hall out of the water. Then
absolutely.
We can explain some things to our listeners.
Yes.
So, Mr. Edwards, I was thinking about making this feature movie, you know, where
okay.
We got to take an African-American man, and he was in the Navy for a long time, and he was a Navy SEAL. He was an expert at everything that he did. He became a Los Angeles police officer and was wronged by the system. And so I want Denzel to star in that, but he's going to have to cut his hair off. And so what happens
you
now—
You mean like Denzel did in the movie in which he won an Oscar, Training Day?
Yes, yes.
Which was a depiction of the Los Angeles Police Department. You, man, that is great thinking, Don. I like that idea. Denzel Washington in that role. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
we have to kind of bulk him up because Christopher is a very, very large man.
Yes, he is.
Yes, well conditioned, well trained. You know, he's also very proficient in ordnance, demolition.
Yes, yes. I was reading about that, and someone had left a comment that the hunters are not becoming the hunted, so they're pretty nervous. They're pretty nervous out there in Los Angeles. But you know, Mr. Edwards, Christopher Donner has become somewhat of a Black History Month folk hero.
Okay.
behind what has been going on. They have the police so nervous that they're shooting up blue trucks with three innocent people in them, newspaper women. You know, that are pulling by the captain's house out there, the LAPD, and they shot three innocent people the other day. Two Asian women delivering newspapers were shot by the Torrance police.
And one of them was 71 years old. I mean, how do you confuse them with a 6'3", 280-pound, well, 260-pound, trim, fighting weight African-American? And then the ramming of a truck that happened just minutes after that, because a citywide alert had gone out that, you know, there was a firefight, which it did not happen. Obviously, the two women did not have weapons. But another L.A. squad rammed a blue Nissan and fired and shot into it and just lucky. I'm predicting that at least one innocent African-American male will be shot and killed in Los Angeles in the next couple of days as a part of mistaken identity.
Oh, exactly. Because, you know, this guy, I was looking at some of the training that they speculate that he has went through, because Army's not going to release that much information to just the media, but he's only going to be found if he wants to be found. And the terrible thing is that if he surrenders, they'll find a way to kill this guy. You know?
Yeah, you know, I think he knows that as both a black ops, oops, operator, as well as a L.A. Police officer. And if you read his manifesto, he clearly raises some serious issues about corruption in the LAPD.
Mm-hmm.
I think he knows that that he will not be allowed to surrender. Some are saying, we had a discussion last night here in the Twin Cities about if he would commit suicide. And I just don't think he's suicidal in that sense to take his own life, okay? He may engage in a firefight with significant numbers of law enforcement, but, you know, he is well-armed. In fact, he's armed, and, of course, you being a former ordnance person with the United States Army in your tour of duty there in Washington State, he's got a 50 caliber. Of course, as you know, that 50 caliber can take you out at 3,000 yards.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
He is an expert marksman, if you will, and so I just think he's made his mind up. He's gone to ground, as we used to say in the covert ops, you know, world. He's gone to ground, and he's got them looking for him from everywhere, from Big Bear way up in the mountains to way down to the United States-Mexican border outside of San Diego. So very dangerous situation. It's interesting when you see police stations under guard.
Yes. Very interesting.
You know. And give us that phone number. Maybe there are some people on the West Coast that maybe have some opinions on this.
Yeah, the phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And The toll-free number is 877-537-2878. If you would like
to call. Yeah, and we're talking about Christopher Garner, the former Los Angeles policeman, former Navy, and, of course, the Defense Department is really trying to stay away from the fact of what his actual duties and responsibility. Do you realize that he became a lieutenant in the United States Navy at about the time that he was about 21 or 22 years of age?
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that.
By the way, he went to school. This was interesting because maybe he was in some kind of ROTC program.
Mm-hmm.
He went to school at Southern Utah University out there.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, Southern Utah. And so football player, all those kinds of things. But, you know, I determined him to be a guy that was, what we called a straight rod, if you will. You know, you
mm-hmm.
guys used to make talk about that in the military. I mean, this guy was Mr. Clean, you know what I mean? Loved America, loved the Marines, or the Corps, as we're taught to, you know, to say. Loved the LAPD. You know, as he said in the manifesto to Captain Quam, who unfortunately, tragically, that was Captain Quam's daughter, one of the three that was killed. He said, you took my family from me. I'm going to take yours from you. That's chilling, Mr. Allen. Extremely, extremely chilling. But anyway, so I'm looking at, I've switched to, actually I've gone to Fox because they're always interesting to see them. They're really in a quandary here because this man is a law enforcement officer, an American hero, quote unquote, at the time he was in the armed forces. Fox News and some of them are having a real terrible time on how to, you know, depict this, craft it, shape it, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But their reporting seemed to be no closer now than they were, you know, 48 hours ago.
Well, like I said, Mr. Edwards, this guy is trained well enough that when he wants to be seen, he will be seen by the right person for the right amount of time, and then he will ghost just that quick. And I'm surprised, you know, and I was just thinking back to the survival, evasion, resistance, and escape courses that I took in the
mustn't go too deep into the black ops, but go ahead.
Yeah, we just got to talk about this a little bit. One of the things is the guy is sitting right under their noses. Okay. He's not out in the woods and all this other stuff. And believe me, they'll never find him. And like I said, unless he wants to be found. Period.
Absolutely. Particularly if he's disappeared into a heavy urban area of persons of color, particularly African Americans. That's the reason that I maintain that an innocent African American will probably be killed in the next couple of days by law enforcement in that area. It doesn't necessarily have to be the LA police because all of them are on a high state of alert.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the Irvine police, it'd be Chino, you know what I mean? It'd be Long Beach. It could be Desert Palms, you know what I'm saying? It could be San Diego. It could be way up in San Francisco or Sacramento, you know what I'm saying? Oakland, because, you know, this guy has been planning this, obviously, even as he was making his appeals after his discharge in 2008. You know, the other thing, I mean, he's a young man. He's a relatively young man, means because he's only 33.
Yeah, 33.
So he's probably in the top of physical condition. And as he said in his manifesto, you know, he laid out his familiarity with all their tactics, and I think that's on display. But it's interesting because what I've been concentrating on in reviewing his manifesto is the kind of allegations he's made against the Los Angeles Police Department relevant to its racism and its role in a lot of serious situations. See, I thought that, and people thought that everything had been cleaned up in L.A. after the situation with Ramparts,
yes.
Legendary and notorious terrorist precinct there in L.A., where they were actually taking people of color out and killing them. I mean, you know, come on now, you know. Maybe somebody out on the coast is familiar with that. But anyways, just give that number again. I'm interested to hear if we hear anything out of from the West Coast, you know,
sure.
Maybe some of our conservative friends.
Yeah, sure. Our toll-free number is 877-537-2878, and locally here, domestically, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904.
Okay. All right, then. Just quickly on the international piece,
okay.
tremendous pressure there in Tunisia after the assassination of a very popular leftist, as he is referred to, a man who was quite respected. Funeral was yesterday. A lot of disturbances and uprisings in Tunisia. The Tunisian prime minister indicating he's preparing to shuffle his cabinet and call special elections. I think that'll probably be enough. But, you know, it necessarily doesn't have to be, but I think it may be enough to return some semblance of stability to Tunisia, if you will. But that was a action that has really driven a dagger into the heart of the democratic process and et cetera. By the way, just as you were speaking, Mr. Allen, though you may add it on your monitor, I thought you were looking at Fox, I was looking at CNN. They talk in terms that the accused shooter has tremendous survival skills. And L.A.'s mayor says that Doran is a very sick individual. Yeah, I guess so. But he's a very dangerous sick individual, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And accused killer still on the alert. Police families under security. They have at least now 60 special operations teams guarding at least that many individuals who are connected with the L.A. Police Department. That's a lot of personnel power, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot of money going down the tank out there in L.A. too.
Yes, it is. And a couple thousand. I mean, they have – I talked to associates in Arizona. I mean, they have searches going on as far north as Las Vegas and Nevada, southern Nevada, western Arizona, of course, Southern California. And also they have asked the federales in Mexico to assist. By the way, if he gets into Mexico, you'll never get him because Mexico does not extradite people who stand accused of a capital crime. In other words, a crime in which a capital punishment could be administered.
Yeah.
So he could show up in Mexico and say, here I am.
Right. Hello. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, okay. Let's get him in.
Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Who are we speaking with?
Hello. What's going on, big brother?
Hey, it's the KG Wilson. How you
doing,
sir?
Hey, my brother. What's happening, man? What can we do for you? What's up?
Yeah. Oh, man. Just calling in, man, checking in. I just kind of caught it on the last part of what y'all was talking about. But I just got informed about that. But I think there was another topic that you guys were talking about. I think I probably would want to.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead, KG. Go right ahead, my brother.
Yeah. Kick it off.
President Obama visited North Minneapolis.
We mentioned that about 7 minutes ago. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with all the white folks in North Minneapolis. I saw the pictures.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, KG. Were you, as a very long-time activist in our community, were you invited to be a part of the particularly the roundtable discussion?
Oh no! You know they wouldn't invite me, man. You know
those dirty bastards.
I'm gonna tell the truth. So I really don't think they really want somebody who's gonna tell the truth or somebody who's really gonna bring up the topic of solutions instead of big huge band-aids.
Mm. Okay.
You understand me?
Yeah.
But I did. I was really curious to why he just visited North Minneapolis and a few other places before going back to our hometown and focusing on the numerous amounts of homicides and the killing and stuff that's going on in me and Mr. President Obama's hometown.
Now, he didn't go back to Chicago. When he got on Air Force One, KJ, he went straight on back home to Washington. But I tell you, who is in Chicago as we speak and is at the funeral of that lovely 15-year-old African-American drum major and honor student is Michelle Obama, the wife of the president. Mr. Allen, you also need to – we were just checking that out earlier.
Yes.
On our feeds. Michelle Obama, the wife of our president, is attended and with that funeral, has been in private session, is there. She went to Chicago. I just kind of did not understand why the president didn't.
Yeah, he
should go to Chicago.
Hey, while we're talking about this, there's someone else that wants to get in on this conversation who's on the line, if you guys don't mind real quick here.
Well, all right, but well, we're keeping KG on. All right, go ahead.
Yeah,
who we got here?
You're live on the air. Go ahead, please. Hello? Okay, I guess you just want to listen. All right.
Okay. Maybe they felt they were a little bit overmatched.
Yeah.
But KG, give us your reflections on this, because I'm trying to figure out what kind of in-depth familiarity and history was brought at the round table. Now, I know that the Reverend V.J. Smith and Gary Cunningham of the Minneapolis Foundation and Mrs. Johnson was there, and then on the other side of the table with the government was the federal representative for the Federal District of Minnesota, in other words, the congressional district. Of course, Attorney General Eric Holder, of course, the president, if you will, and federal U.S. Attorney Todd Jones. But I was trying to get the feel, where was the observations of community activists such as yourself, sir, who have been out there time and time again, who have held vigils, who have held town forums, and et cetera. Who was the representative with factual information, to the best of your knowledge, sir?
Well, me personally, I didn't see those people at the table either. You just said something that was the first of me ever really hearing somebody say out their mouth, and you said Reverend V.J. Smith. I worked side-by-side for a few years with V.J., like 6 years ago, and I never, ever heard anyone call him Reverend.
Oh, yes, when the itinerary was being put together by the congressman's office and by Mayor R.C. Ryback. Sherman Patterson, the mayor's urban liaison, was
Sherman Patterson.
Sherman Patterson was the mayor's point man in putting together the invite list, both for the external and the internal, the roundtable.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of people, you know, either were in or out, if you will. And
yeah.
That's when it emerged that Reverend V.J. Smith was he anointed by Bishop Howe? Because both individuals that we previously named are members of the powerful Shiloh International Ministries here in the Twin Cities, and so I thought that Sherman Patterson and the Reverend V.J. Smith, who are both members of Reverend Howe's International Ministry Tabernacle, you know, I thought that they were really taking care of business on behalf of Bishop Howe. By the way, that's where a significant amount of the money will go. I don't know if you're aware of that, KG, Mr. Wilson, but the money that will be brought, that is being brought in, that will be funneled through Shiloh International Ministry. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, what I do notice is from the outside in is that a huge piece of this was connected to Shiloh Temple. The people that were at that table, maybe one or two or three other people that are not actually members or go to that church, were at that table. And I have no problem with who's at that table. But like I said again, you know, I'm from Chicago, born and raised, and Obama, I'm quite sure, has heard about the problems in Chicago. I'm quite sure. Every day last year, there was a homicide, you know, so two or three, sometime four, sometime 10 in a day.
Yes.
And I just was curious to why he has not went there. It's a nice thing. Yes, it's good that Miss Obama's there, but he should be there, too. And he should be also there going back into the communities and trying to figure out and put together some type of programs or some type of employment for the youth there, because the problem is not the adults there. I'm just hearing about problems with youth killing youth, preferably black youth killing each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is really my focus right there, and it's going to continue to be my focus. Those people that I heard that were at their table, I hope that they came to the table and brought the real issues there. Are you guys still there?
Oh, yeah, we're here.
Real issues there of what's going on in our community. A gun cannot do anything to anybody just sitting on the shelf. We don't make no guns. We're not bringing the guns over here. The guns are getting into our communities some kind of way. Who's bringing them? Now, as far as Obama and them dealing with those people right there, but we have an issue of violence in our community that we do not want to grow to the intense level of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? So if we don't focus on that, we will have a bloody summer, a bloody
mm-hmm.
summer, bloodier than last summer. And so until we come together and try to find out how do we fix this type of violence that's going on in our community, preferably on the north side, we're going to have a problem whether Obama comes or whoever comes. You understand
Absolutely.
Me? Because Obama's not going to stay here, my two brothers. He's going to leave. He just came for what, 30 minutes, an hour, or whatever, and he's gone.
Two and a half hours.
Okay, but we're still here. We live here.
Yes, we do.
So we need to bring people to a table without Obama that live here with courage that are ready to come to the table and say, look, enough is enough. Let's do something about it.
Okay,
absolutely.
Let me interject if I can real quick, Mr. Edwards. And Kate.
Go right ahead, Ms. Allen.
Yeah, yeah. Now, here goes to one of the main systemic problems of what's going on. The philosophy of the people they're calling to the table is tainted. We as a black community in Minnesota, especially in North Minneapolis, individuals are being defined by people from the outside. Those people from the outside are those people, Gary Cunningham, B.J. Smith, and whoever the hell else they had at that table in that room trying to discuss the community. We've watched these people over a number of years, especially more closely from 2008 to 2012, and we've watched absolutely nothing get done. We watched the mayor's public policy aide, Sherman Patterson, hand-pick people to be there when Obama came into town, hand-pick using a very serious incident and a person related to that incident to have and put this individual on Front Street in front of the president as if guns, again, let me say this again, as if guns were the problem. Guns are not the problem in Minneapolis. Minneapolis has an economic development problem. It has an opportunity problem. It has a DFL political plantation problem. Okay? Until those mm-hmm. things are addressed and we can do it in a cordial and diplomatic way with people at the table who are not just there to get their hands wet so their wallets can get wet, so their messages can get wet, and not actually help the community. We've seen this repeat here, especially since 2008. So actually,
well, let me say this as a kind of a leftist here, if you will, and
yeah.
a DFL, you know, sparkler kind of thing. And Mr. Wilson, this is really for you to know about how this game. Are you still there with us, KG?
Oh yes, sir.
Okay. Here's one of the things that I was really disturbed with, and it is reflective in my column this week in the Spokesman Recorder. Were you aware, gentlemen, that the most senior legislative representative in the state of Minnesota, who also, for the first time in history, became the first African-American to be the assistant majority whip of the Minnesota Senate, do you know that Senator Jeff Hayden was not invited?
Oh, no.
Do you know that both the congressman's office and the mayor knocked him out of the box?
Wow.
And Senator Hayden, who also is the most senior senator in our state legislature, if you will, in our Minnesota Senate, that he was denied the opportunity to come in, because my position is that a man of – because, Mr. Allen, you just said something, and K.G. Wilson just said something, that when you talk in terms of things that are going to be needed, you're going to need the help of the legislature, okay? And this man is the assistant majority whip. He is the senior senator, African-American in the Minnesota Senate, and he was disrespected.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, he was denied the opportunity, because my position is, knowing the situation longer than either one of you gentlemen, just based on
mm-hmm.
age and, of course, experience, because I've mm-hmm. been out here for over 50 years dealing with this, I was shocked when I heard that not only was he denied, but you also need to know that the editor of the beloved Cecil Newman's newspaper, the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. Cecil Newman, one of the great icons of the Democratic Party, Mr. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
She also was denied a invitation to the meeting.
I also heard there was a few felons in the room. How did they get there?
You know, I don't know. I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
You know, with respect to my Democratic friends and liberals, if you will. But that is absolutely correct. there was. they didn't know that they were not going to be able to go into the round table with the President of the United States. But they had been boasting in the 8-9 days prior to that. But I am aware that our friend on the line here, Mr. K.G. Wilson, who has been a longtime activist in this community, I can attest to the fact that he's been on site, if you will, and et cetera, that his name was purged early. K.G., your name was purged early. That's one who would not receive an invitation. But here's what I say to you. Welcome to the club, because I'm not going to name the person, but my colleague on the other end here and in the other studio asked the question of a longtime DFL power broker about a couple of individuals, which actually would have included him, and he was told, and he did ask about yours truly, he was told those kinds of people would not be invited. So I don't know what that means, those kinds of people.
which let me say this real quickly. Well, one thing about me is if I would have been invited, I still wouldn't have went anyway.
Okay.
That is not my place. That's not my podium. I've been asked to come speak in places I refuse to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a guy that's an outside of the hood guy. I'm a hood guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a political guy. I'm not. I'm just your everyday average guy who lives and walks and talks and breathes to be an example of change. I want to be one of those people who are just an ordinary, everyday citizen who have been to hell, and God brought me out of hell, and I want to be an example to all of those that are in hell to let them know that you don't have to stay there, that I'm an example that you can come out. And then go back and get some of your brothers and sisters and bring them up
out of purgatory.
And that's all it's about, brothers.
Right.
I don't care about being at that table or none of them tables.
Okay.
I want to be at the right table, the table of change, not
right.
the table of sin. Who's going to get the next piece of money?
All right. KG, appreciate you calling in, my brother. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
God bless
you,
brother.
All right. All right. All right. Now, I have to say, though, Mr. Allen, that any time you can get at the table with the President of the United States, the most powerful person in the free world, you've got an opportunity for change. And so I still feel bad that people such as the caller, the publisher of the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, Ms. Tracy Williams Dillard, and specifically the most senior state senator in the state of Minnesota, who is an African-American, were purged. I'd like to know from the quote-unquote facilitators of who was in, who was out. I'd like to know what the rationale was of who got selected and who didn't.
I think that's
a fair question. Maybe we can get one of them or one of their proxies to call in and tell us what was the criteria.
And we have a couple callers calling
in. Let's get them. I'm sorry. Let's get them.
Caller, go ahead. You're live.
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the air, ma'am.
Yes, so my name is Lisa, and I am calling because I heard that, you know, about the list of invites as far as the president coming into North Minneapolis, and it's, like, very disturbing to find out the people that did not get invited. Jeff Hayden, I do have a lot of respect for him. He worked very hard to get to where he is, and if we want to look at the president coming to our state, I think we should focus more on organizing instead of symbolizing, because a lot of people that should have been there was
all
not
right.
there. And the media, I mean, Minneapolis Spokesman's Recorder, they're rooted. They're godfathered in, I guess I would say. So they should have been there. I mean, that's the media. So I don't know why the media is disinvited to something like that when they're responsible for talking to our community. We want to get the message out for even why he was there. I do have respect for Mr. V.J. Smith. I do know him personally and a lot of stuff he has done. I don't really get into the drama as far as, you know, we are aware of those who use the system for what it is. A lot of those who I guess have another way of hustling, we do know of that, but then we do want to give credit when credit's due. But I want to talk about the gun control, because one thing that the mayor did say is we have a lot of things already in place that the president is trying to fight for. We have those laws in place as far as the universal whatever it is.
Background check, universal background check. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do have all that stuff in place, so why – what is it about Minneapolis? Does it have anything to do with our negotiations when we had the terrorists, when we were trying to brand the name terrorists? You know, what's going on, you know, as far as the president coming here, you know, because we do see the symbolizing, but when it comes to what's going on in our community, I don't think the president know that we are not organized. And so he came here to see a mess, pretty much a circus. So how do we – so we're pretty much entertaining the world here, but we have a lot of people that are dying, a lot of our kids that are uneducated, and that's what's most important. So what's the plan? You know, that's the question.
Well, and that's an excellent point. I'll tell you who some of the architects of the plan are. That's our responsibility as journalists. One of the people who really has taken significant control, and Mr. Allen, this to make you feel good here to some degree, is the Republican sheriff of Hennepin County, the county in which Minneapolis is the county seat. Richard Stanek has really taken control. And to your question, Lisa, the Stanek plan is the one that's at play here in Minnesota and in the Twin Cities, which is interesting. Now, Richard Stanek, before he became sheriff and even while he was a state senator, was a high-ranking, in fact, he obtained the rank of captain in the Minneapolis Police Department. So he knows Minneapolis. He's been around. He headed up the CID division, that is the intelligence division, and et cetera. But your question is well-crafted, and it's one that needs to be asked, quote-unquote, of the leaders. Where's the plan, and who is the architect of the plan? And the president was encouraged, by the way, to come here and kind of, you're right, do this dog and pony show by Sheriff Richard Stanek and to a lesser degree Chief Janae Hato when they visited with the president in a roundtable discussion in Washington, D.C. about 10 days before, all right? And they really encouraged him, direct conversations with Attorney General Eric Holder, that there's a plan here in Minneapolis. Now, what it really was all about is that the person that was auditioning, and I think you kind of suspect that, was Mayor R.T. Ryback, who will need a job after November of this year.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Can I say one more thing?
Go right ahead, Madam.
Sure.
I think that when it comes to our community, we made a decision to either educate our community or lock them up. So I guess we wanted to either work with each other to focus on some alternatives or just lock them up and label them as mentally ill, kind of like what happened with the Kennedys, you know, the history of the Kennedys, and just throw away the key. And so I think at some point we need to decide on if we want to believe in this prison to pipeline or organize our community, get them involved, give them some type of hope, I guess, if that's what, you know, the president stands for, hope. Give them some kind of hope that they're involved in this process so that they can, you know, so that we can all be in this together. Because we're not organized, we're not in it together. And it's also, this includes more than just those who walk around in suits, ties, and T-shirts.
All right.
And so that's what I'm saying.
Well, by the way, I appreciate your call. And let me just say to you on the record, on behalf of myself personally, I can't speak for anybody else, I vote for the latter that you talked about, okay? The prison pipeline is a disaster for the survival of our community. But thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
We have another call. Mr. Edwards?
Go right ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Edwards. And Don, how are you both?
Fine, sir. Okay. This caller? Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
I thought I saw a California. Go right ahead, sir. What can we do for you?
Well, I wanted to make a couple comments. I've been listening to the program, and I want to make a comment about the brother Chris Dorner, as well as your last caller. I can't recall his name. but there
Casey
is
Wilson, and, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Wilson, yes. And I want to preface my comment by saying I respect him so much for what he's doing in the community.
Okay.
But there's a comment that he made that it turned my stomach when I heard it. And I wish brothers would stop saying this. Is he's an activist. But he said, I'm a hood brother. I don't go outside of the hood. When you say that and when you do that, that sends a message to your peers that says stay in the hood.
Oh,
and
okay.
When you operate in that sphere, nobody outside of that sphere is going to hear your plight. And not your plight, but they're not going to hear your word.
Okay.
They're not going to hear your passion about your community. And
so
what I would implore.
So you confined and limited and structured yourself into a narrow corridor. Is that
into a very narrow corridor that ends right back to the same place.
Okay.
When you reach outside of your community and ask people for help, and not necessarily ask them for help, but show them what your community is going through.
Okay.
A visual has an impact on people that have never seen that. So I would just implore that, brother, to please go outside of your community. The one thing I've always heard is you, Mr. Edwards, and you've always talked about the people that you know, the meetings that you've gone to, the courthouses, the trials. That means, and you have gone outside of your community, and you have spread your word and your message outside of your community. That's why you are so well known and so well respected and so well loved.
Okay.
So again,
well,
and I would just implore that brother to please go outside of your sphere.
Okay.
You would be surprised of what you can accomplish through that.
All right, sir. Let's ask this question. We appreciate that. What is the state of affairs now in Southern California? We've been seeing, Mr. Allen and myself have been seeing live feeds and et cetera. It looks like you're under state of siege. I've never, sir, seen a situation where police stations are under guard. What's happening? Can you bring us up to speed on what's the latest right now?
I can't. And it was funny. I was just talking to my wife. We live and we can view a major street. And the one thing I mentioned to her was I said, baby, I haven't seen any police on the street. So the police are very focused and very concentrated on what they're doing now. But I can tell you this, that he has a lot of support.
What? You're saying he has support?
Let me back up.
Okay.
He doesn't have support for his killings.
Okay.
Nobody supports.
Okay. Let's clarify.
Nobody supports the what he's done.
Okay.
The criminal acts that he's done.
Okay.
But his message, and again, I've been watching the news feeds, and in particular on Channel 11, a Fox channel. There's a newscaster, Steve Edwards, and he has an attorney on with him, Robin Sachs. Is her name.
Okay.
And again, Robin Sachs, Robin Sachs.
Okay.
And she has actually found that he has been telling a big truth in his manifesto as it relates to the code of silence, the racism within LAPD, as far as him seeing the lieutenant or the officer kick, the female officer kick that in the face, that was actually corroborated by the gentleman's father and a couple members of his family.
Now, this is the situation where a homeless man was being arrested
mm-hmm.
by Mr. Dorner and his female
yeah.
partner. She kicked the individual both in the chest and in the face.
And in the face.
He reported
right.
her.
Right.
Unfortunately, he didn't know that she had some personal relationships inside the precinct.
Right, exactly.
They set
yeah.
him up by giving him a defense representative who was Captain Quam, if I'm not mistaken,
mm-hmm.
who actually sold him out. But now
right.
you're saying, and I've heard this, Mr. Allen, I heard this on a couple of short wave broadcasts out of California. they're saying now they found evidence that Mr. Donner was telling the truth from the get-go. Is that what you're saying, caller?
Yeah, and there was actually an affidavit that was filed that actually his father actually said it in there that he had a bruise under his eye. So it's consistent with what Dorner was saying as far as a female officer kicking him. It actually was true that he was called that awful word when he was in the van, and I mean anybody would have reacted the way he did. I don't know who could just sit there and take it like they expected him actually. That you know, they expected him to just take it.
We're not familiar here in Minnesota with the van. What was the incident in the van?
What happened? He was in a van with some recruits. It was a 12-passenger van with some recruits, and there was someone up front that said the N-word a couple of times. And first time he told them, "Don't do it. Don't say it again." And then he said it again. So then he reached over the seat and grabbed him around the neck and was choking him.
And Mr. Dorn is about, what, 6'4", 6'3"?
He's about 6'1". Yeah, he's a big brother. But he asked him politely. And everybody that has talked about, just to speak to his demeanor, everybody has said, you know, he's a gentle guy. So that was true. That did happen. He did choke the guy. But, again, any one of us would have done the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
let me ask you this, caller out of California. Appreciate your call. How well trained is this individual?
Well, his security clearance, and I'm in the security industry. He has the highest security clearance of anyone in the military. The only person who would have a higher security clearance is someone who works for the president or the vice president.
See what I told you, Mr. Allen?
Yes. He went through CENTCOM. CENTCOM. Yeah, that's Central Command in D.C. in Washington. They're based in Virginia, I believe, Langley, Virginia.
Yes, they are, right across the river.
Right. So he actually his training is.
Well,
he is probably.
Let me ask you this question, Mr. Allen. Any questions? Just jump in here. Why is there this attempt to make it appear that he's just some kind of crazy Negro?
It reminds me, and I read his manifesto, and it reminds me of a movie, that soldier that went rogue, and he did it for a reason, and they just don't believe him. They know that if they really research everything that he said, he could bring a department down. Because I'll tell you, as he speaks to the racism, there are certain parts that even myself, and I'm a highly educated, white-collar worker, that I won't go in certain communities because, you know, police are more prone to pull you over.
Oh, okay.
And we've known that since high school. So, and the community has never changed. The police has never changed. And now the commanding officer that was in the Rodney King beating is now the captain in that division, in that West L.A. division.
Wow.
So it just, again, it perpetuates itself.
All right. Mr. Allen, you have any questions for this call?
No, I'm enjoying listening to this. This is very, and our listeners are too. We have full room here.
All right. Sir, if we could impose upon you just a tad more, we appreciate you calling in from the West Coast. Is there any other observations you because it appears that this African-American first United States Navy lieutenant, by the way, and he obviously obtained the grade of lieutenant very early on. He's only 33 now. He mustered out after 7 or 8 years, so he became a lieutenant at around age 22. Am I on point there?
Right, you are.
Okay. So this was a highly not only motivated individual, but he was extremely educationally and academically motivated by the same thing. But I mean, he clearly brought significant success. When you go back, sir, when you say that there's a lot more support out there, not for his actions and crimes,
exactly.
Unfortunately,
right.
But that he was attempting, and apparently had been since 2008. See, everybody's losing sight of that, Mr. Allen.
Yes.
That since 2008, this man had been attempting to gain a platform. Now, caller, am I off base there? That he had been attempting to gain a platform to tell about the corruption. And they,
you're exactly right.
Okay. Now, is it correct, sir, that all of these matters pertaining to him and his discharge, that he was appealing these matters, that they were under appeal in the judiciary system?
You're exactly right. They were all under appeal, but you know what's the it's the perfect case of a whistleblower.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you know the difference is now the people that can be damaged by what he has said. It goes all the way up the ladder. So he knows, you know, my wife and I, there's a cabin we visit often in that Big Bear area.
Oh, you know the Big Bear area, okay.
Yeah, Mike, yes. So we summer there and we winter there quite often. And that area, he knows that if you know the area, they may never find him. And he also said in what just came out, he has survivalist training.
Yes,
so,
yes, we reported that here about 20 minutes ago. We saw a live feed out of, and obviously you're in the Los Angeles area,
right,
that he has tremendous survival training.
Exactly.
Okay.
So once, and again, so what's already, if you just look at the sheer scope of it, his training, and if you read his manifesto and you can read between the lines and you understand security, he has the same training as the SEAL 16. And beyond.
You mean Team
That's
6, the highly
exactly.
touted team that went in and got Bin Laden?
Exactly. You'll notice his shots. His shots were very targeted.
Headshots.
Exactly. Two shots, one shot, they were very targeted. So that's not a sloppy person. He knows exactly what he's doing. And I think I heard you say it's true. He does have, they say he does have that sniper rifle.
50 caliber. Can knock you off at 3,000 yards,
Exactly. Yeah, a mile and a half, exact. So he knows
what
he's doing.
We've got to wrap it on this end. We're coming here. We appreciate you calling. And, again, we want to be clear. You're calling out of the Los Angeles area. And you've given us some significant insight that we certainly out here in the Midwest, us farm boys. Appreciate it, sir. Thank you. And
thank
hopefully
you.
We'll hear from you again sometime.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Allen, I know we're down about the last 5 minutes. Your assessment.
Well, I just think that this Mr. Christopher Donner, if I'm not mistaken, I just turned away from the monitor. I think that something miraculous might happen. I mean, I'm hoping that something miraculous might happen where this stuff is exposed with the LAPD before he is shot and killed.
Because they're going to kill it.
They're going to kill him.
No doubt about it. They got to kill him. They got to silence him. Go ahead.
Even if they arrest him, they'll figure out a way to kill him in the jail. They'll say he hung himself or something like that. He's a dead man walking either way, but let's just hope that something good comes out of this.
Okay. All right. What do we have, Mr.?
We're down to it. Under 3 minutes. And is there any final thoughts or words, Mr. Edwards?
Yes. I want to go back to the well-respected Marvin Corky Taylor, and I want to encourage those who knew him, who followed his career at the University of Minnesota starting in 1971 as a young, gifted basketball player out of Detroit. I just hope that they examine some of the information that's emerging about how he was wronged, Mr. Allen, and lost a 35-year career because of the treachery of Velma Corvell and others in the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. By the way, there were four other individuals, Mr. Calderon, if you will, a Miss Marker who died of a natural death, a Miss Crossland, a Ron Brandon, a Mr. Brandon, who, by the way, won $180,000 settlement from the city about a year ago in the same situation. And so they were all targeted, and I understand, with the exception of Crossland, that all of them were purged out of the department. Just would encourage folks that they need to examine what's happening in the city of Minneapolis in that civil rights department. It's a vicious place with vicious, dishonest leadership. That's my comment and observation, Mr. Allen.
Okay, well, thank you. We'd like to thank everybody for listening, and I'd like to leave you with this. Mr. Edwards, you remember Black Wall Street, right? Back
yes,
in Tulsa?
I do.
Okay,
yes,
I'd just like to say Black Wall Street had 600 businesses, 21 churches, 21 restaurants, 30 grocery stores, 2 movie theaters, 6 private airplanes, 1 hospital, 1 bank, and its own school system. I challenge our listeners to look around in the neighborhoods where they live at, and if we don't have that stuff, we need to get it pretty quick. And find out why we don't have it.
Damn good point, Mr. Allen. Damn good point. All right.
I got something in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing. Sing on.